Hi, and welcome to another episode of Are We There Yet? The podcast about ADHD and success and the correlation between both and how everyone has their own perception of what they deem success as. Now, today's guest is Tamsin Crook. And Tamsin, you are a careers counsellor. There's the word. Thank you very much. It's late. My medication ran out. I can't speak anymore. But hi, how are you?
I'm very good. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much. So before we get started, do you want to tell us a little bit about what your actual job is then?
Yeah, so I started off working in HR initially. Well, not initially, but that's my most relevant recent job. And then decided to do a careers counselling course briefly when I was about 32 weeks pregnant, I think, with my second child.
And for their life. Is that what it was?
Well, it was because I thought that, because my eldest was in nursery, but he wouldn't be once the baby was born. I just literally had this defined time when I could do something interesting before I'd be off on maternity leave again. So I thought, right, I'll go and do that course. I do that quite a lot. And I loved it. And although initially I thought I would just sort of add it to the HR skill set, I thought, actually, this is a really good role I can do alongside having the kids and work flexibly and just sort of grow things organically. So that was 12 and a half years ago now. And so I've been careers counselling ever since. And I just work for myself, just work with private clients and work with them, different kinds of people. People being made redundant, looking for something different, or just people looking to make career transitions. It's mostly adults who are just sort of looking to do something new, basically.
See, for some reason, when you said careers counselling, in my head, I instantly went to school.
No. I mean, most careers counsellors do work in that context, but no, I work with adults.
Right, okay.
So, most of them are sort of 24 plus, up to kind of 60 sometimes.
I'm not going to lie, at 24, yeah. I got married at 25. I'm not going to even say that I was an adult at 24.
No.
I feel like
it's quite hard at school to think about careers and what you want to do because you don't have that much life experience. You don't know what you like. You don't know what you enjoy. And actually, I think kind of early 20s is quite a good time to really think, start thinking about it.
That is actually an interesting point because I know a lot of people who have ADHD who are in their mid-20s, late 20s, either going back to university to do what they actually enjoy. Or they're now in, they've changed just slightly so that they can do what they actually enjoy.
Yeah. Well, you're so much more motivated when you know what it is and why it is that you're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You can get your head around it much more, can't you? And it feels like there's a point to it.
I think the motivation thing's a big one, though, because you have a lot of people who, like, in my job, it's very much, or maybe this is Britain, it's very much not to say, oh, I want to get a promotion because I want more money. And it's like, no, I am very interested in spreadsheets.
Yeah.
You're not. You want more money. But it's a weird thing to say, whereas I think when you're younger, it's you're just looking for something. And you're just like, I don't know what I can do. I liked art in school. What can I do with that?
Yeah.
And that's why you go to university, whereas I didn't go to university. I just kind of went from job to job to job to job to job. Probably could have done with someone like you, actually. I had 13 jobs before I was 19.
That's pretty good going.
It's an achievement. People always used to say, like, how do you keep on getting jobs? Surely they look at your CV and go, oh, you can't keep a job. And I was like, well, no, because there's always a crossover. I just move on to a better thing. That's it. Something that's either more convenient or just better.
Yeah.
So you said that the HR stuff was a more relevant thing.
Yes.
So what was it before then?
So I started off, I did a geography degree and I started off doing sort of environmental consulting. But that was only sort of work experience. And I really enjoyed it. But in order to progress within it, I would have had to have gone and done a master's and probably a PhD and all that sort of thing. And the pay was rubbish. I thought I can't afford to do those things. And I thought I wanted to work for a charity. And so I sent my CV off to a charity recruitment agency and they'd only just started up. And so they said, come in and do some admin for us for 3 months while we're getting set up. So I did that. I thought it'd be quite a good way of, you know, working out, you know, what charities were around and what job that I could do within a charity, and ended up nicking a job off the books kind of thing. And it was amazing. It was such a good job. I worked as an overseas events fundraiser. So I used to take groups of people off to places like India and Nepal and Iceland to go and do like really challenging treks that they were raising money for the charity.
Like the sponsored Arctic Circle type stuff, yeah.
Exactly. But it was right at the beginning when all of that was just starting up. So it was all quite novel and it was all quite exciting. And that was brilliant. I absolutely loved that. Because I'd spent most of my time just chatting to fundraisers and encouraging them and helping them raise money and send out ideas and, you know, organise kind of events for them to sort of help them raise the money. And then you'd actually go out on the event. So you'd be cycling around India or, you know, hiking in Nepal or whatever it was. So just amazing job for the early 20s.
So you got to do that without having to do the like grueling fundraising part.
Because the reps, the organisation that we went with was brilliant. It was called Community Action Nepal, and they were kind of a charitable organisation themselves, but they were a travel agent as well. So they kind of had a charitable arm, and they were amazing at working with the Sherpas and the particularly the rural areas in Nepal. So it was kind of a double whammy. So the charity that I worked for was called WizKids, and we used to raise money for wheelchairs and equipment for kids with disabilities. But then also the people that we were paying to take us out there were also a charitable organisation as well. But they would give places for the reps because that would save them from having to pay people to do it as well. So it's kind of a double role.
So see with all the, like, you said the Nepal one. The Nepal one. Was it only there, or like was there more that you...
So like, I did
more places you went to?
I went to Nepal, which was hiking, and I went to India, which was cycling, which was really hard. And I went to Iceland as well, hiking, trekking in Iceland, which was amazing. Yeah. Absolutely amazing.
I feel like Iceland's one of the, like, it's a really underrated place.
Oh, it's beautiful. I'd love to go. Beautiful. But I love it.
I hear it's really expensive.
It's ridiculously expensive. You can't drink. And the food.
Yeah, I don't want to go.
Yeah, it's you have to squirrel away a bottle of something in your luggage when you go. But it's absolutely stunning. Every direction you look in, it's like different landscape, and it's just beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Stick it on your list.
Yeah. I like doing weekends places. Like, I'd love to just, I say I like to do weekend places. I go to Amsterdam for a weekend. That's a slightly different holiday. I do the tourist, like the actual go to museums, and we went and saw like the windmills and the tulips.
Did you go to the science museum in Amsterdam?
The
science museum in Amsterdam.
No.
I should take the girls there. It's absolutely fantastic. I would love it.
When they're a bit they might harsh my buzz.
yeah.
I would love to go to Amsterdam and take at least take my wife, because she thinks Amsterdam is just like the stag do Amsterdam. It's not. It's beautiful.
And it's good with the kids because you can stick them on a bike and go cycling around the parks, and yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah, see, it's I'm not so much now, but actually before I got diagnosed and before I was medicated, I was a really good sleeper. So I always, my head hits pillow, I'm out. But I always woke up at the same time. I always woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning. I could be out on a night out until 3. I wake up at 7. So when I was going on lads' holidays, or I say lads, none of my friends are lads. When I'd go on holidays with my friends who happened to be male.
Yeah.
And we went to Amsterdam. I woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and then went out and then did what I like to say is be a real European and go get a nice little espresso, a nice little cafe, and pretend I'm fancy and do it on my own. And it was really kind of nice and just relaxed, and it's beautiful. And also all of Amsterdam looks like it's held up by the next house.
Yeah.
Which is just incredible. But beautiful. See, when you were younger then, mm-hmm. what was it? no offense, but I don't think anyone when they're younger says, oh, I want to be like an HR or I want to be in what was it when you were younger that you were like, oh, this is what I want to be? Or
I think I wanted to work with kids. I think my mum, my mum always said I either wanted to work in a nursery or be a paediatrician or something. So I always wanted to work with kids. But I think I was the youngest of three. And my brother went on to be a doctor. And my sister went on to be a teacher. And so I kind of almost ruled anything clinical or anything to do with teaching. I kind of ruled it out. So that's already been taken. That's already been done. So I didn't really know what I wanted to do, to be honest. I enjoyed geography and I was good at geography and had a brilliant teacher at school. And so that took me in the geography direction. And geography, you can do anything with, you know, you can learn about anything at all with geography. It's brilliant. So you can kind of choose all sorts of random modules and stuff. So I really enjoyed that, but didn't really know what I wanted to do. I liked the idea of working for a charity. I did, they have this thing at university called Nightline, which is, it's not counselling, but it's like they call it a listening service. And it's like a nighttime thing. So you go and you're in this sort of really crappy little room with a couple of mattresses and you answer the phone in the middle of the night. And sometimes you're talking to people who are having real difficulties. And sometimes your phone, you know, somebody phones up. And I remember this one person phoned up, it was 2 a.m. and clearly been drinking or whatever. And he's like, what was the name of the fawn in Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe? And I was like, what, Mr. Tumnus? He's like, yes, that's it. But, you know, this is days before Google. I was like, really? You woke me up at 3 a.m. to ask me that? But anyway, so I really enjoyed doing that. And that was probably the biggest part of me at university. So I guess that kind of took me sort of slightly in the direction that I went in.
It was more of like a helping people type of...
helping people, that sort of thing. And I really enjoyed that. In the charity, I did the events for a while and then it gets a bit kind of samey because you've done it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting more involved in how the organisation was run and in the HR side of things. And then they lost some corporate funding and they had to make some redundancies, and because I wasn't fundraising anymore, the HR team got cut. And then I went to work for an internet company and just struggled a wee bit. I just kind of felt like I wasn't, I don't know, I never felt kind of cool enough to work for an internet company.
People who work with the internet?
Yeah, but there's kind of a quirky, cooly thing that I just didn't really have, and I kind of didn't really get on there. Although I had an amazing manager who I'm still very much in touch with. And then went to Australia for a few months because my husband was studying and he did a sabbatical out in Sydney, so we did that for a bit. Nice. And then came back and I worked for the NHS doing learning and development, which was brilliant. Loved that job. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Just working in a hospital, doing sort of induction training and management development training, and worked there till I had my first son.
So, see, when you were younger, if your brother's a doctor, uh-huh, and your sister's a teacher, was there like a strong kind of like, were your parents quite a driving force then? Because a lot of those sort of jobs are ones where parents kind of...
Yeah, so if vocational, I think, so my dad was an engineer. My mum was a nurse. My mum's mum was a GP, which was really unusual in those days.
Yeah.
So I guess there was that kind of, there was definitely a link. There was definitely a medical link.
Just for listening, when she says in those days, Tamsin looks about 18, but she does have a 15-year-old. So I'm going to assume that the age is for her grandmother.
Yes, yeah. I'm trying to work out how old she would be now. So I can't do a quick maths. So, I mean, it was probably, anyway, it was a long time ago and it was unusual for her to be a GP in those days. So I think she was quite a force. Mm-hmm. And she was very focused on the medicine. And it was really, really important to her. It was a really major part of her life. Although we didn't really know it sort of growing up, because you don't really know what your granny does, do you? So I guess there was elements of that, but nothing, you know, there was no kind of direction from my parents. They were never kind of, you should do this or you should do that. It was just kind of, you know, they sort of stood back and just sort of support. I remember the night before my A-level results came out, I was absolutely terrified that I, you know, mucked it all up. And I remember my dad just saying to me, do you know what, sweetheart, it doesn't matter what your grades are. If you can get on with people, you'll be fine. Doesn't matter. And that was just sort of a real, yeah, that was, I will never forget that. It was really important.
That is a, by the way, that is a lot to live by.
Yeah, it is, right? It is.
100%. I have gotten so far just on the fact that I can make a good first impression. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I don't know if I've said this on a podcast, and which is my only issue with having ADHD on the podcast, is people go, oh, I really liked what you said on this one. And I'm like, I don't know what I said.
No, exactly.
But it's the, I've been commended at work for how I deal with like senior stakeholders and things. Uh-huh. Because they're like, you're so like nonplussed about the fact that it's someone who's this level or someone who's this, and you speak to them like they're a normal person, and you're so welcoming and you're so enthusiastic. I've also been pulled up because I speak to people of a certain level the same as if they're the same as everybody else. Yeah. With the same enthusiasm, and they're like, no.
Yeah.
Like, wait, so you're happy for it to be a first impression, you just don't want it to be the constant impression. Sorry, yeah. I can't turn this off.
Yeah. This is
but that's the thing, like, I've had a lot of opportunities and things because people go, worked on a project with this guy Ross, like, he was really, like, he was on it, and he's like, he's a nice guy I talked to, and that was it. They didn't really know me, so it was fine. And then I've had opportunities that way.
Yeah.
My parents were very much more of the get a trade.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter, just get a trade.
A trade, yeah.
Which, no offense to anybody in trades, but last year was a hard year for everybody in trades.
It really was. Yeah.
And it's probably one of the few times that my dad has actually said to me, yeah, at least you work for like a bank.
Mm.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, I started in 2009 in the credit crunch. So I remember working at a branch and people coming up to me and going, oh, is your job okay? And I'd be like, I hope so, I just started.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's...
But that's a really good sort of, like, I'm going to stick with the word law. That's a really good law to stick with.
Yeah,
if you definitely. Can get on with people, you're okay.
Yeah.
My own... Yeah.
Sorry. I remember I went to my dad, because my dad was an engineer, and I went to, he retired 20 years ago probably now, but it was probably about five, six years ago anyway, they had this kind of reunion thing for his work colleagues, and I went along with the boys. And the thing that was so wonderful is that everybody I spoke to about my dad, they all said he was just the most amazing manager. He knew how to manage people. And when I've spoken to him about sort of ADHD and neurodiversity, he's really interested, and he's like, you know, we never had names for these things, but I always knew if I had somebody on the team who didn't really like working with people, I knew I'd get them on a job doing something else, and they'd be really good at that. So it's almost like he has this kind of underlying understanding of, you know, how people tick and how people work, and I think that really set him up well.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like a compass, yeah. You know, like where people belong type thing.
Yeah.
And not put them in a box, but kind of going, oh, this is the way your current's going to take you. So I'm mixing my metaphors here, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
But like, this is the way that you should go. Mm-hmm. And that's really good. I think that I know a lot of people who want to be managers. And don't get me wrong, it's good to have goals. But see, people who want to be managers, I just don't think should ever be managers.
Mm. It's hard, right? Because I think in the way that our organisations are set up, in most places, the only way you can progress and do better is to manage people. And what we haven't worked out yet is how people can progress in their technical strengths, mm-hmm. and, you know, progress and do well and raise their profile and earn more without actually managing people, because it's a different skill.
Totally. Yeah, 100%. And it's something that I feel like I'm now, that I'm getting like a free counselling session, but I'm taking advantage. Like, I've always been of the thought of, I don't ever want to be a manager because I don't have the temperament for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mince my words enough, basically. And it's very much, my manager My manager is great. She is. She's genuinely a really good manager. And she tries to, everything that she says is all about, what can I do to help you?
Yeah.
But ADHD isn't like other things. Other things, it's, what can I take off your plate? What can I, like, pull back? And I'm like, more plates.
Yeah.
Give me more plates, give me more things, and I'll work better. Which is, I'm going through an awkward stage just now because my job's quite repetitive. It's not that I'm not doing well, and it's more, they're saying, oh, well, maybe is it went talk health, and they're like, oh, well, should we get it done so that we can officially say that you only have to do 80% of what other people were doing? And I was like, in my head, what that's saying is that I don't have to work Fridays.
Yeah.
And they were like, what do you mean? I was like, 20% of my week is a day.
Yeah.
I can do, if you want me to do 80% of the work, that's fine. I'll do 80% of the work. I'll just do it in 80% of the time that you're...
Absolutely.
And it's a weird mindset where you're kind of like, I understand that you don't think I'm a... You can't trust me to do what I'm doing just now, so why would you give me more responsibility?
Mm-hmm.
But also saying, I need you to give me the opportunity of responsibility. I actually done a massive thread on this recently about, like, the opportunity of responsibility. If no one's going to die by giving me it, give it.
Yeah.
And don't do it as in a, I'm here as your safety net, because that doesn't help. All that does is put the thing in my head that goes, I don't need to try because someone will save it.
Yeah.
It needs to be my motivation and it needs to be my responsibility.
Yeah.
But knowing that there is no major, major consequences except reputational damage if it goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone can understand that, then it's fine. But when you're saying it, you get to a point where you have to manage people.
Yeah.
My last couple of jobs, they're like, oh, when you go for your next role, it'll need to be a management role. And I've managed to dodge it.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, my job title is assistant manager. I don't manage people. I manage things and I manage, like, cases. That's fine for me. But I am going to eventually have to get to a point where I'm going to have to manage people. And I've had enough managers and enough experiences where I'm like, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I know it all. Yeah. I've been in the receiving end of the bad side. And the bad side isn't always the person who is on you.
Mm.
The bad side can also be the person who isn't.
Mm-hmm.
To me, and this kind of, like, a lot of my life is consistency is key.
Yeah.
If one of the managers we used to have in one of my old jobs, when you start in a job, you can't like her. You just can't. Because she's on you for everything.
Yeah.
But then as you get to know her, you're like, oh no, you're actually the best one here. Because you're consistently like that.
Yeah.
If I do what you're telling me to, then that's fine. And it's consistent and I know where I stand. Whereas you get people who they try and lay the law down at the start and then get a bit meh towards the end. Or I'm going to be your friend. Oh wait, and I need to discipline you. Oh yeah. Wait. Yeah. Just be consistent and it's genius.
Yeah.
Sorry, I've kind of gone off.
It's hard. Second guessing sort of motivations and stuff is hard work sometimes.
Yeah. The thing as well though is you do it for yourself. You're self-employed.
Yes.
That must have its own like challenges.
It does, and I think there's lots of stuff I don't like about being self-employed. Lots of stuff. I hate any kind of sort of self-promotion or social media or, you know, I can't bear that side of things at all, so I just don't do it. I Twitter and I, you know, interact with people, but not in a kind of come and be my client kind of way. I can't bear that. So that's difficult. Admin, obviously, is tricky. I've got a brilliant non-judgy accountant who I can, you know, give my stuff the day before it's all due in, and she'll be like, yeah, no problem, I'll sort it. Because it's not complicated, you know, the stuff. But that was good. So when I got somebody to do that. But one of the things that I found really useful, I think what I really miss is that kind of team thing. And I miss bouncing ideas off people. And so I've had to kind of recreate that. And so actually the study group sessions are fantastic.
Yeah.
And there's another group that I go to as well, which gives you that kind of accountability and that kind of informal networking. I do lots of CPD and you know, courses and things like that to make sure I'm still learning, because I always need to be learning. But you have to create that yourself. And I think that's the thing that is hard. But then I think I would also find it really hard to go back into employment now, because I'm so used to the flexibility, which is what I really love and need and value, particularly at this stage in my life and my kids' lives. So mm-hmm. it's sort of trying to work out the stuff that you struggle with and putting the scaffolding in to manage that, and enjoying the other side of it.
See, that's what I like about being employed. Because my dad's self-employed, I've seen him stress when things aren't going the right way. But I've also, like, I've seen him be like, ah, you know what? I think I'm going to go fishing this weekend. And then that's how just bup, off he goes. Whereas I like the structure.
Yeah.
And I like the 9 to 5. I'm the only person I know who can say that. I like the 9 to 5 because it means that there's certain things I need for respite. And it's one, getting out of my house. Mm-hmm. Like, my kids are insane. And it's just being able to get that work environment and the people at work. Don't get me wrong, I go into my office 2 days a week and I sit in a room with no windows with sometimes one other person. And it's through choice, so I'm okay with it. If I want to go and sit beside people, I can go sit beside people, but I'm on calls all day, so it doesn't really make any difference. It's just a change of environment, and it's a work environment, so it kind of puts me into a work mindset. But there's also the side of it where, see, if I was self-employed, I think there's too many opportunities to go, oh, I'm just going to quickly go and do this.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, I'm just quickly next to this.
Very blurred boundaries, which is hard.
Yeah, whereas, at least with mine, I know at 5 o'clock, the blinds come down type thing. Don't get me wrong, if I'm really into something, like I've seen me sitting up until 1 o'clock building something, but doing it because I know it's going to help me in the long run at work.
Yeah. And because you're interested in it.
Yeah, that's it. And that's it. And going back to what you were saying before, like about how in school you don't know what you want to do. And I also hate the self-promotion thing, by the way. So this isn't me self-promoting, just for anyone listening, but I hated in school two subjects. I hated accounting and I hated English.
Okay.
I work for a bank. I wrote a book.
Yeah.
I write poems.
Yeah.
If you'd said to me in school, you should go to university and go do like literature or go do accountancy, I would have told you what bridge to go to. Yeah. Like, no, I liked drawing and making things. So, and not the physical making, but putting a design and going, look at this. Mm-hmm. So my first one was, I want to be an architect. And then someone went, 7 years in university, and went, I don't want to be an architect. I said, I like animals. I want to be a vet. 7 years in university, I don't want to be a vet. I want to go work in Curry's. And let's go. And I went to college for a little bit and done graphic design. And then work said they'd give me full-time hours, and I left. Like that. 3 months, went, nah, done. Because it was always, what's the next thing? What's the better thing for me?
Yeah.
And it's the one thing that's good about the bank is there's so many different routes, which I didn't realize when I first joined. It was, I needed a job. That was it. And that's what I did. But it's, like you're going back to what we were saying before about your parents and the very encouraging sort of, if you're good with people, you're set type thing. And that's not to say that if you're bad, if you've got bad social interactions, then that's it. Just thrown the table.
Not at all.
Because like I know there's a guy at my work who's ASD, and no one can say a bad word about him because he doesn't talk to anybody. He does his job better than everyone else, and he just sits here, does it, goes for lunch, comes back, does his work, goes, and that's it.
Yeah. What my dad was sort of saying is go with your strength, basically.
Yeah.
Saying those words, it's like you like people, you're good with people. If you can do that, then focus on that. Don't worry about the academic side of things.
Yeah, it's kind of the thing, like, if you're good at the academic side, then that's fine, run with that. But if you aren't, don't worry about it if you're good with people.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's a really good way to kind of look at it. But would you say that you've kind of kept that sort of, like, perception of success, then, that this is what you can... Well, that's more of a career. That's not really so much success unless that's what you put your success basket into.
So I think, so the reason I got really interested in success is because I started doing a master's in career management in like 2015 or something. And I was trying to think about what I wanted to do for my research. And at that point, I had just, my eldest sons had just been diagnosed with ADHD. And I was like, yeah, I think I am as well. This obviously clicks, which I know is really, really common. And I was sort of reading up about ADHD, and it was so, at that time, so it's like 2017, I started on the research, it was really negative. It was all about problems, and it was all about disorder and deficit and problems. And I was like, I was looking at my kids and I was like, I don't want that for them. I don't want that to be their narrative, that that's what they see. So I'm going to do some research about people with ADHD who feel like they're successful. And so that was the, I wanted to know what people's strengths were, and I wanted to know, you know, how they saw their success. And so that's what I based my research on. And I got my formal diagnosis at that point, because I felt like if I was going to be talking to people with ADHD, I needed to know whether I was, I had ADHD myself, or whether I was just an interested researcher. But what was, it was just really, really interesting talking to, I spoke to 16 adults. Most of them had been diagnosed fairly recently. Everybody had very different sets of careers. I wanted it to be quite broad. I didn't want to just sort of speak to the typical kind of ADHD careers. And everybody had such different stories of what success meant to them. And I went into it wanting it to be really positive, not superpower narrative. I don't think I've really kind of subscribed to that particularly, but I wanted it to be positive. But I think what was really interesting is that as I went through, it just became much more nuanced, because I think it's really hard to pick apart the strengths from the difficulties and the successes from the from the challenges, because it all kind of, it's all quite contextual. It all kind of depends on people's experiences and what's going on around them. And something that can be a strength in one context is actually really problematic in another context. But it was just a really, really interesting process. And the question that I asked them, which is what your podcast really made me kind of jump up to, was, do you think your success is because of or in spite of your ADHD?
Yeah, my questions here, Tamsin.
I know, right? And but everybody, it was all so... It's not one or the other.
No, I don't think I've had a single person say yes or no.
No, exactly. And I think it was, I think what seemed to come out is that the successes that people were really excited about and really proud of seemed to be the ones that were because of their ADHD. And the stuff that had been really kind of hard won and quite hard work was in spite of. So that was when they were having to compensate and make up for and really, really try.
Mm-hmm.
And those were kind of, those successes, I think, were a bit harder to recognise.
See, once you recognise that though, right, I think that is where you feel the most pride.
Yeah.
Like, see, so, like, I have a, like, the mouth for stories, basically, okay? Mm-hmm. But I've never had the ability to sit down and stick beginning to the end. And that, for me, that was the thing. Yeah, I like the story. I like the creative side of it. But I'm happy just at the fact that I finished it
mm-hmm.
with the same sort of, like, fervor that I started it with. Like, the same, like... My thing when I was younger was very much like, I have a great idea. I have a solid introduction. It's due tomorrow. And then he did this and that was it. And this thing.
Yeah.
But that was the part that got me, which is the issue with my ADHD is the sticking with it long enough for me to do it.
Yeah.
So I understand the thing where, yeah, the things where it's, oh, in spite of, that's the stuff that struggled, and it's harder to kind of attach success to that. But I think that's the thing that you should be kind of putting more kind of weight onto, more, and this is my own opinion, but that's pushing through your own sort of barriers, I think, is something that should be shouted about.
Yeah, and I think it's something that I think the diagnosis was really important for people, because it changes the lens, doesn't it? When you understand why things have been difficult, then you can look back and say, that's why it was really hard. But at the time, you just think you're a bit crap. So one of the women that I spoke to, she was amazing. She published all these articles, but she said she hated looking at her CV, even though, you know, objectively she was incredibly successful, because she knew just how hard it had been. So looking at it just reminded her of hard time.
Struggle.
Exactly. And then, you know, another guy was just like, oh, you know, I just thought I'd been lucky, because I think is, you know, our working memories aren't that great. So sometimes you forget what you've been doing in order to set yourself up for something. But I think also we often tend to have quite low self-esteem and low confidence in our abilities. And so you kind of think, well, it can't have been my ability. It must have been luck. It must have been, I was just in the right place at the right time. So, and then you get the diagnosis, and I think it sort of builds your self-awareness and your understanding of yourself. And then I think also people sort of redefine what they're looking for a wee bit, and it stops for they're not sort of chasing the typical, this is the idea of success that we're all supposed to be chasing, and they work out actually what's really important to them. And I think ADHDers tend to be it's important to them about inside what they're doing. And I think, you know, a lot of people were saying that, you know, a lot of their success is driven by emotional response. So they want to do something that they feel means something. They want to do something they feel is impactful. And then it becomes less important about how much they're earning, or, you know, whether they've got a big house, or, you know, whatever that might be.
I can see that. I have trouble doing the little things at work because it's not important.
Mm.
I want to redesign the wheel. I don't want to drive the car.
Yeah.
But I'm going to pick you up on something, Tamsin, because you kind of, well, one, you kind of asked the question I was going to get to, which is fine, but you then answered it for other people.
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So what's your own perception of it then? So do you think that your ADHD has helped or hindered your success?
I mean, absolutely both. I really struggle putting myself forward for things. I think I always, you sort of assume that somebody else has always been better qualified, or has got better experience, or stronger voice, or, you know, whatever it is. So I tend to kind of keep a step back a lot of the time. And I think I've done, you know, I've studied quite a lot, and I think that can be kind of a bit of a hiding thing, because it's quite boundaried, and it's like stops you from having to go and push yourself out somewhere.
I feel it's like a protective thing though.
Yeah.
You don't have to
achieving because you're doing something constructive. But actually it would be braver sometimes, I think, to go and do something a wee bit more. Actually in a corporate, well, not necessarily corporate, but in a working environment. But then
kind of push yourself out.
I don't regret any of the studying.
No.
I think the ADHD helps, because in some ways it makes me, you know, makes me enthusiastic about stuff. It makes me care about stuff. I've got a real justice orientation. I like things to be fair. I like things to be right. If I don't think things are fair, I'll sort of try and make those changes. But I think also I tend to be sort of within my own world a bit more. So it's about making things better for the people around me a bit. I'm less sort of trying to change the world, I suppose. and I'm more about just sort of incremental.
That's good for you as well. I was speaking to someone about this recently, about the fact that me being, that this sounds like I'm dissing people who have the ambition to help people, and I'm not. It's almost like an unconscious selfishness, which is a bad way to phrase it. But what I mean by that is that, see, by helping other people, you're helping yourself.
Yeah.
The more people you help, the more word gets out, the more you get to help people, the better you feel. It's like, if you constantly help people to the detriment of yourself, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yes.
All absolutely. You're going to do, and it's like Renee says, that whole protect your yes thing.
Yeah.
I 100% agree with that, despite the fact that I'm terrible at it. But a lot of the time, it helps me and helps other people around me by helping someone. So if someone's looking for that sort of little bit of a boost, and yeah, it's going to take a bit of time for me to help them with it, it's okay, because one, I feel like I've helped someone, therefore I feel better about myself.
Yeah.
And I kind of try, you're almost living vicariously through them, their success is your success type thing. And it sounds like a really cynical way of putting it, but there's a massive negativity around the word selfish, which I don't quite believe in. Mm-hmm. And I think we get it the hardest because of that, like, justice muscle, I'll call it, that you mentioned, is because people think that we want to do things our way, because our way or the highway. It's like, no, it's not. It's, this is the best way for it to be for everybody. I'm just the one that's loudest about it. That's the difference about it.
Yeah.
And you should, people should be selfish. It should be the airport, the plane going down metaphor. Like, put your own mask on first.
Yeah.
But then help other people put their mask on.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is, and again, getting the diagnosis helped me see this, is that sometimes you pick up, so sometimes fighting for a cause or fighting for, you know, an issue, whether it's at work, something that you don't think is fair, and you jump on it and you try and solve it and fix it. And sometimes that's absolutely the right thing to do. Sometimes it costs much more than it's worth, and you're spending too much time on it to the detriment of other stuff that you could be doing that would be much better for you to be doing. And I think part of that is because we don't let go of stuff. I think also sometimes it can be quite a nice distraction, a little bit drama. And I think sometimes we're kind of attracted to that because it's more interesting. So, I remember something at university that I was a bit grumpy about, and I spent ages sort of trying to negotiate and do all this thing on behalf of the whole cohort, and they were really happy for me to do that, but I wasn't doing my stats revision. I should have been learning my statistics and all the rest of it, but because I was really, you know, geared in this injustice, I wasn't doing the stuff that I should have been doing. And if I'm really honest about it, it was a distraction as much as anything else. It was both. Sometimes I think what I try and do now, with the knowledge of why I do things and why, you know, certain things take my attention, is just have that step back and think, okay, why am I doing this? What am I avoiding? And, you know, do I need to look at this? Am I the best person to be doing this? You know, where should my focus be? And I don't do that all the time, of course, but half the time that helps.
See what you said. Like, the one thing I do love about doing this podcast, by the way, is the fact that, like, I'll keep on popping back to things we spoke about 5 minutes ago. But you said something about, oh, no, I've just forgot what I was going to say. And that's why I hate about doing this podcast. what was it? Nah, it's totally gone. It'll come back in a second. No, I can't remember what I was going to say. That's, now it's there. But there was one thing, see when you're saying about how we don't let go of things.
Huh?
My mom likes to say, no. Yeah, my mum always say that me and my dad have a grudge gene.
Yeah.
The most petty thing in the world. And I'm like, yeah, but remember when?
Yeah. My son remembers all the times he's ever been wronged. He will remember something from when he was three that you know, you promised him and you didn't deliver on or something like that. He will remember it forever.
Oh, I have a list, and my mum now listens to this podcast. So yeah, listen up, because I'm pretty sure she won't remember this one.
He'll come
down. Grounded once for walking around the wrong side of a bus stop, because clearly I was just being annoying, and I was doing that thing where the bus stop is and there's a curb, and I was walking around, like balancing on the curb round, and I was just annoying her, and she grounded me because she said I was setting a bad example for my sister, when actually all it was I wasn't listening and she was getting annoyed with me. But yeah, I remember, Mum. I remember. My sister was in a buggy, so I was 11. Like that, yeah, that's how long ago that was. I remember that. But all I'm thinking now is that you did a master's on what the purpose of this podcast is, and you said you spoke to 16 people, and now all I'm thinking is, there's 16 people that, anyway.
Absolutely, it was brilliant, and I loved it talking to them, and it was so interesting. Just to, I think also it was one of the first times that I talked to that many people about ADHD as well, and so having those conversations with people, and you have to be a wee bit careful when you're doing the research in terms of sort of, you know, not projecting your ideas onto people, so you have to be quite, you know, good at sort of sitting on your hands sometimes and just listening to what people are saying. But the stories that they come out with is really, you're like, oh God, I totally get that.
I remember what I was going to say. It was when you were saying about how you quieten yourself because you're like, oh, someone else is better at this or someone else is better than that. I think that there is a side of it though where we're so well kind of, you've had so many people tell you how you are.
Mm.
Oh, you're this, or you're good at this, or you're, but oh, you can't do this, or you can't do that, that you kind of keep it to yourself and you go, all right, I can't do that because of this. But there's also the side of it where you're more honest with yourself.
Yes.
So, like, for example, I can't play sports. Never been able to play sports. I have no interest in sports. And there'll be people who through the years went, oh, do you want to come play football? And I'm like, no.
Mm.
And like, oh, but it's good exercise. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm good. Is it, why? Is it, oh, because you'll get annoyed with me within 20 minutes because I cannot pass a ball. I cannot hit it straight. No, it's just not me. And I know people who have then, they've managed to convince me, and genuinely, like 20 minutes, like, so you're not coming back, right? Like, no, I told you. This is what happens. Yeah. I'm sitting at the side of the pitch, like, blowing a lung, and like trying to find someone who has cigarettes. And I'm like, please, I gave up the actual cigarettes like years ago, but just, I need something to fill the lung back up.
Oh, bless you.
But like, I do it at work. Like, there's people at my work who, they say that everything has to be done my way. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. The things I know I'm good at need to be done my way.
Mm.
Because I know what's going to happen. I know I'm going to let you in. You're going to want to do it your way. It's going to take twice as long, and then I'm going to end up having to do it my way.
Mm.
Let's just cut that and let's just do it my way. And then when we get to this bit where we have to be tactful and we have to be like articulate and we have to put like a big report together, it's going to take 3 hours to write. That's where you shine.
Yeah.
That's where you do it. I have a friend in my old job who's really, really good at writing minutes. And he hates the fact that he's really good at writing minutes. I used to get him to come to all my meetings and write all my minutes because I hate it with a passion.
I think it's interesting as well, isn't it? Because I think there's stuff that, so I think ADHDers can often be really good at setting up systems, and you know, they know how things work and they're really good at setting it up, but then using it and consistently can be quite difficult because once you've kind of set it up, it just becomes a bit dull. Using somebody else's system can be quite hard sometimes because you're like, well, hang on a minute, that doesn't logically work and that isn't, you know, what I would do, and I'm doing a different way. So there's sort of different parts of the jobs that we really enjoy doing, but you don't necessarily want to do it always.
All the time.
Yeah.
I know I've mentioned this one before, the whole thing that if you find an aspect of your job you enjoy, you'll enjoy your job.
Mm. Yeah.
I've stuck to that. And obviously I've been horrible. I stuck to the fact, like, I did door to door, and I stuck to the fact that I like talking to people.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter if it rained or hail or whatever. And I mean, I live in Scotland, it was raining and hail a lot. I enjoyed the speaking to people.
Yeah.
And honestly, nothing feels better than when it's like 3 degrees outside and you're freezing and you're soaking and someone lets you in and makes you a coffee.
Oh, bless.
It doesn't matter about a sale. Yeah, they're just like, come on, just come in. Come on, just sit on the radiator. It's fine. Just get warm. Come on. Like, thank you so much. Also, have you heard the news? I've always kind of believed that.
And I think that's why it's really important to know. I think for everybody, it's really important to think about where you're going to fit and where the environment that you're working in. And who you're working with and all that sort of stuff. I think it's really important. But I think for people with ADHD, it's really quite essential that you are working in an environment that works for you, and that you're interested in what you're doing and that you work with people that you get on with. And I think if you can do that, it makes the harder stuff easier.
Yeah, I think there's a side of it though where ADHD is a bag of contradictions, right? We hold grudges, but we also have terrible memories. So the whole like forgive and forget is more, I'll forget, but I'm not forgiving you. I don't know why, but I'm no.
Yeah.
Whereas it's the time. Yeah. Like, I remember working in as a waiter. And I still hate this woman. I can't remember her name, right? That's how bad it is. I despise this woman that was my manager when I worked in this restaurant. I enjoyed the job to the point where I became a waiter again. But I still hated this woman with a fiery, fiery passion. And it's like, I used to leave that job raging at her. Yeah. And the next day, walk in as if nothing had happened because I'd forgotten what had happened. Yeah. And then she'd speak and I'd be like, oh yeah, I hate you. I forgot I hate you. Honestly, like two examples that come to the top of my head. One, they locked me in a walk-in freezer.
What?
By accident. No, it wasn't by accident. You thought you were being funny.
Oh my God.
And the other one was amazing because the owner came in and went mental and I got to just go and it was an old croft kind of restaurant, so it was like stone walls, mortar in between all the stone and everything, and she told me to dust the wall. Yes. Now, Tamsin, I don't know if you know what happens when you dust a like brick and mortar wall that's been up for like over 100 years.
Quite dusty.
The dust leaves the wall,
yeah,
and then settles overnight. And came in the next day, and there was basically brick mortar over every table, over every piece of cutlery, over everything. And we had people coming in like half an hour. And it was beautiful because I walked in and went, look what you did. And I went, I'm sorry. So I was 16. And she was like, look what you did. And I was like, I did what you told me to. I didn't tell you to put dust out everywhere. And I was like, you think I went and put dust? Is that what you think I did? It's like, took all off the wall and just threw it. No, this is because you asked me to dust it as a power move. The owner came in and went ballistic because, well, he had people coming in. The whole place was, horrendous. But here's, the creme de la creme. It was Mother's Day. It was one of the busiest days of the year. And I walked. I waited. I didn't clean any of the tables. I kept on waiting and waiting and waiting until I knew it was going to be too late for them to get anyone else in. And I just went, oh, by the way, yeah, good luck, and just walked.
Oh my goodness, that's a revenge move.
Well, I'm not gonna lie, like, it was bittersweet because that restaurant was in the middle of nowhere. And as I said, I was 16.
Did walk out.
And I had to walk there, which meant I also had to walk back. And it was like 3 miles in like country roads. And I'm walking. And I smoked at that time. And I, oh yeah, I forgot about this actually. I stole cigarettes before I left. So I picked up my jacket and her cigarettes were sitting in her jacket pocket. And I just went, I'll be having those. And then smoked all her cigarettes and I was freezing and I was wet. And that was the best smokes I ever had in my entire life. Walking down, just being like, this is what happens when you try and pull a power move.
Oh my God.
And it's genuinely, like, yeah. Honestly, that's a lesson for me. My entire life, I've never tried to pull a power move on someone because I did it to someone and I was like, well, I would never want to be her.
Yeah.
I think I went on a massive tangent there, but that song just came flooding back to me.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting because I think that whole kind of game playing thing, we don't really have the patience for. And I think that can be problematic as well. That could be one of the other things that makes life difficult in organisations because you don't play the games that other people might play more easily and you don't necessarily understand the politics or want to get involved in the politics quite so
that,
much.
Yes, that one. It's that the latter. I think
you do get it, but you're cynical of it and you don't want to necessarily get involved in it.
I feel like, see, in places, I hate the phrase play the game.
Yeah.
Like, it winds me up. But see, looking at it from my perspective, I feel like there's all these floating shelves, right? And these are the things that you have to walk on to get up.
Mm-hmm.
But we're the only ones that can see the strings that are attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
And no one, and everyone else just pretends that these strings aren't there. No strings are the manipulations that you have to do to land on them.
Mm.
And one of the poems I did, the cat isn't just a cat one, it finishes with a phrase which is along the lines of, you don't want us to, we don't play your games not because we can't, but because if we did, you wouldn't stand a chance. And it's the we know where all the skeletons are buried. We just don't understand why no one else can see them.
Mm.
And that's the thing. Like, I quite easily do the corporate ladder thing. And I think if you look at, like, the successful people who are, like, CEOs and all this who have ADHD, yeah, it's because they just went, oh, I'm not going to have my morals. I'm just going to just take everybody out.
Mm.
And that's how they did it, whereas I don't want to be like that. I want to kind of change the environment I'm in. And I think the world now is kind of changing to that sort of way that is encouraged. It's, oh, wait a minute, maybe we should listen to the people who are creative and who can think in a 360 way and not the people who are linear and are like, oh, we're doing this because we always have.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sort of hoping that the strengths of neurodiversity are going to be better recognised. And I think they're going to be really important going forward. So as other things sort of come in to take over the more typical kind of roles, I think the sort of the creativity and the connecting ideas and that sort of ability to sort of join the dots in a slightly different way, I think it's going to be really important, that sort of innovation. And so that's what gives me sort of hope, I think, for the boys and for my kids. That's what I'm looking at the moment. I think they're going to be fine. I think getting through school's hard and getting through those sort of jumping through those hoops is tricky. But when they work out what it is that they want to do, I think they're going to be all right.
No, definitely. I think that's a very good place to, a very poignant moment of stuff in there, Tamsin.
Yeah, that's good. Quite pleased with that.
I'm not going to say anything because I'll ruin it, but thank you very much. I feel I spoke almost as much, if not more, than you did. But yeah, thank you very much for asking, first of all, to be on the podcast and also coming on. It's been great.
Thank you very much. See you later.
See you later. This podcast is proudly sponsored by Teemo, the award-winning visual planning app that supports routines and time management. Teemo was designed specifically to support executive function and empowers users to take control of their schedules. Head to your app store and type T-I-I-M-O into the search bar to learn more. Teemo is available on Android, iOS, and smartwatch.